Now let's refer to the second chapter, verse 49. And while we're doing so, let's remember Arjuna's situation and where the Bhagavad Gita is being spoken. Bhagavad Gita is taking place on a battlefield, and the two opposing armies are getting ready to fight and destroy each other. There is excitement in the air, and everyone is ready to fight. But what will be the result of this fight? Yes, someone will win the kingdom and someone will lose, but there is going to be unlimited bloodshed. In text 49, Krishna says, Durena Yavaram Kama Buddhi Yoga Dhananjaya. Dhananjaya is Arjuna. And Krishna is saying, O Dhananjaya, O Arjuna, keep all abominable activities, Durena, at a great distance, far distant, by Buddhi Yoga, which Prabhupada has translated here as devotional service. Rid yourself of all abominable activities by Buddhi Yoga, the yoga of Buddhi, or the intelligence. In the next verse, Buddhi Yoga, Buddhi Yukto Jahatiha, Ube Sukrita Duskrita, Tasmad Yogaya Yujyasva, Yoga Kamasu Koshanam. A man engaged in Buddhi Yoga, again Prabhupada translating into devotional service, rids himself of both good and bad actions, even in this life. Therefore, strive for yoga, which is the art of work. Now, Buddhi again means the intelligence, the yoga of the intelligence. And using the yoga of the intelligence, put all durena yavaram karma, all abominable activities by the use of your intelligence, should be left far away. In fact, in this chapter, Krishna has used the term Buddhi Yoga in the 39th verse, the 41st verse, or the 44th verse, the 49th verse, the 50th, 51st, 52nd, 63rd, 65th, and 66th. 10 times he's used the term Buddhi Yoga in the last 33 verses. That's 1/3. What did you do?
He's trying to figure out what the...
So 1/3 of every verse of the last 33 verses has used the term the yoga of intelligence. Use your intelligence. Put abominable activities far away. And Krishna has spoken, what is the second section of chapter 2? Gyan, very good. And in the fourth section, he's spoken about the yoga of intelligence. And yet, he's telling Arjuna that he should fight. Give up all abominable activities. In text 70, a person who is not disturbed by the incessant flow of desires that enter like rivers into the ocean, which is ever being filled but is always still, can alone achieve peace, and not the man who strives to satisfy such desires. So one shouldn't try to satisfy one's desires. One should be fixed in gyan. One should be fixed in the yoga of intelligence. One should put all abominable activities far, far away. And yet, Krishna is telling Arjuna that he should fight. So therefore, Arjuna asks, as the first verse in the third chapter, and he calls Krishna by two different names, Janardana and Keshava. O Janardana, O Keshava, why do you want to engage me in this ghastly warfare if you think that intelligence is better than karma or fruit of work? Now, to add to that, Krishna, in the last section, what's the section E of the second chapter?
Samadhi.
And what was that Sanskrit term that means fixed in transcendental knowledge or fixed in transcendence? Sthita Pragya. So he's just glorified one who is more or less completely neutral in the material world. And yet he's engaging him to fight. He's requesting Arjuna to fight. So if the goal is sthita pragya or samadhi, why shouldn't I be situated in sthita pragya? Why are you asking me to fight? Right? So, Janardana, another name, meaning of Ardhana, thank you, is problems. And Jana means people again. So, O Janardana, O one who gives people all problems. But O Keshava, there's a very interesting meaning of Keshava. Means Lord Brahma. Sha or She means Lord Shiva. And Va means Vishnu or the controller. So, O Keshava, you are the one who is giving everyone, you're Janardana, you're giving all problems. But you are Keshava. You control Brahma and Lord Shiva, and you are Lord Vishnu. So therefore, I have to do what you say, but nonetheless, you are Janardana, you are giving me this problem. Why are you doing this? So, Prabhupada explains in the purport, Arjuna also thought of Krishna consciousness, or Buddhi Yoga, this is right at the end of the first purport, as something like retirement from active life, and practice of penance and austerity at a secluded place. Because of that section on Gyan, and because generally the concept of when one is going to be a spiritualist and one is going to become renounced, it means that in people's minds that one gives up his activity and retires from the world. So therefore, Arjuna thought that he would like to retire from the world, and especially this horrible fight, because he was interested in Gyan, just as Krishna was suggesting. In other words, Prabhupada explains, Arjuna, he wanted to skillfully avoid the fighting by using Krishna consciousness as an excuse. But as a sincere student, he placed the matter before his master and questioned Krishna as to his best course of action. In answer, Lord Krishna elaborately explained karma yoga, or work in Krishna consciousness. Now, Arjuna continues, my intelligence is bewildered by your equivocal instructions. Now, what are the equivocal instructions? Equivocal means two. You've explained two things equally, jnana and karma yoga or buddhi yoga. Working and retirement. That's how Arjuna is understanding that at this point. My intelligence is bewildered by your equivocal instructions. Therefore, please tell me decisively which one, ekam, tadekam, vada, please tell me which one decisively will be most beneficial for me. So, Arjuna's understanding is that karma or work and jnana, which in his mind, jnana in his mind means retirement, but actually he's thinking that karma or work and jnana, the attempt to get knowledge and be situated on a platform knowing that one is not the body, they're two separate things. Now, this isn't true. And Krishna is going to explain this, and gradually we're going to understand that there is a yoga ladder. And these are different steps on the yoga ladder. In text 3, the Supreme Personality of Godhead says, O sinless Arjun, I have already explained that there are two classes of men who try to realize the self. So here Krishna starts answering Arjuna's doubt about which one should I do. Tare kam vada, tell me one I should do. You've told me two separate things equally. Tell me one that I should do. Hosinless Arjuna have already explained that there are two classes of man who try to realize a self. Some are inclined to understand it by empirical philosophical speculation, and others by devotional service, or as the Sanskrit is, karma yoga. Karma yogena yoginam, and the other class is jnana yogena sankhyanam. So one class of man is inclined to understand it through renunciation, and the other class through work. Now the word class in Sanskrit is nishta, which actually means faith or platform. So two different men who are trying to understand the self are on two different platforms, and according to the platform, or according to the nishta that they have, their platform, they will act in one of two different ways to understand the self. One of the ways is karma or work, and the other way is renunciation. Was that clear? That there is actually not two different separate processes. There's actually one ladder with two platforms. And depending upon one's nishta, or position, or faith, or clarity of heart, one will take up one position or another position on this yoga ladder. So Arjuna has misunderstood that there are two separate things, Sankhya, or Jnana, and Karma. And they lead in different directions. But actually there's one yoga ladder. There is one process with two different stages. This is a very important point, and Krishna will now explain it. There's one process, two stages. Now, Arjuna has been called by Krishna Anaga, Maya Naga. Anaga means, O sinless one. So Arjuna is sinless. Therefore, it means his heart is uncovered, and therefore this problem that he's having is actually not his problem, and this question that he's asking is actually for the benefit of others. Because Krishna has certified that he's anaga, or sinless. Right? Everyone following so far? Because we're into the second section. Now the first section that we just talked about in our shortened form over here that is supposed to help you memorize the sections to get a feel for the chapters. The first section, the section A, which is just short, just verse 1 and 2, is renunciation. Or work. This is what Arjuna... This is his confusion. Should I become renounced or should I work? So Arjuna is inquiring in those first two verses, which is better, to be situated in knowledge or to work? He's asking this as if the two were completely separate and if the two were actually opposed to each other. But we're hearing that they're not opposed to each other. They're two different steps on the ladder towards the same goal. Okay, that's the first section. Now, the second section that we're going to speak about now is a summary of what Krishna wants. Section B is going to describe something about nishkam karma, or working with no material desires, combining renunciation and work. It's not so this nishkam karma changes renunciation or work to renunciation while working. Because that renunciation, as we heard of very quickly in the second chapter, is internal, not a renunciation externally of activities. Okay? So that's what we're going to hear about in the second section, which goes from 3 to 9. Now, Krishna starts explaining that these are two stages, the work and renunciation, they're like two different stages. Now, not by merely abstaining from work can one achieve freedom from reaction, because that was Arjuna's desire. Nor by renunciation alone can one attain perfection. That's text 4, purport. The renounced order of life can be accepted when one has been purified by the discharge of his prescribed form of duties, which are laid down just to purify the hearts of materialistic men. Without purification, one cannot attain success by abruptly adopting the fourth order of life, sannyas. According to the empiric philosophers, simply by adopting sannyas or retiring from fruitive activities, one at once becomes as good as Narayan. But Lord Krishna does not approve this principle. Without purification of the heart, sannyas is simply a disturbance to the social order. On the other hand, if someone takes to the transcendental service of the Lord, even without discharging his prescribed duty, whatever he may be able to advance in the cause is accepted by the Lord, Buddhi Yoga. Svalpam apyasya damasya trayate mahatobayat. Even a slight performance of such a principle enables one to overcome great difficulty. Text 5. Everyone is forced to act helplessly according to the qualities he has acquired from the modes of material nature. Therefore, no one can refrain from doing something, not even for a moment. It is not a question, Prabhupada explains in the purport, of embodied life, but is the nature of the soul to be always active. Without the presence of the spirit soul, the material body cannot move. The body is only a dead vehicle to be worked by the spirit soul, which is always active and cannot stop even for a moment. As such, the spirit soul has to be engaged in the good work of Krishna consciousness. Otherwise, it will be engaged in occupations dictated by the illusory energy. Now, the idea is that the soul is active by nature. It is active, it must act. Krishna has told Arjuna in the second chapter, karma eva adhikaris te ma paleshu kadachana. That means your adhikari, or eligibility, on the yoga ladder is to act. Your eligibility is karma, or work. Krishna has explained that there is a stage of sannyas where one gives up his prescribed duty. The nature of the soul is active, so therefore the Vedas prescribe prescribed duties that one can act, and his activities won't drag him down, but one will those activities will elevate one. And what does elevation mean? It means purification of the heart. It means getting transcendental knowledge. And then, when one's heart is pure, one is on the jnana platform. So karma, working, after one is pure, one is freed actually from the modes of material nature by adding jnana, by adding transcendental knowledge, brings one to the actual jnana platform where one is above the three modes of material nature and one knows that he's not his body. If one's heart is not clean yet, is not beyond the three modes of material nature, and one accepts the externals of the jnana platform, which is described as sannyas, which means the giving up of all prescribed duties, then one will find himself in a very difficult situation. That his nature is to act. He cannot act on the transcendental platform because his heart is not yet clean, but he has to act, and he has desires to act, and he has material desires, and he's not allowed to act because he's renounced his prescribed duties, and therefore Krishna will describe what happens to such a person. One who restrains the senses of action, but whose mind dwells on the sense objects, certainly deludes himself and is called a pretender, because Krishna has told Arjuna that his adhikari, eligibility, is karma, or work to get clean. But if you renounce work while your heart isn't clean enough, while your eligibility isn't high enough, and sannyas means renunciation of prescribed duties, then you are a pretender. Because your mind will dwell on the sense objects because your heart is not yet clean. And therefore, you delude yourself and you are called a pretender. And such a person, and the Sanskrit word is mitya achar. Mitya means what? Anyone know?
False.
And achar means?
Follow.
False activities. A pretender. He's engaging in false activities. So this is something that we should avoid. One has to learn how to act according to his particular eligibility. And this comes, as Arjuna is hearing it, it's coming from his guru, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So one gets this from his spiritual master. On the other hand, text 7, if a sincere person tries to control the active senses by the mind and begins karma yoga in Krishna consciousness without attachment, he is by far superior. So we're going to gradually fill in all the stages on this yoga ladder. There is karma by which one is attached. This is what we call sakkarma over here. Where in the beginning, your adhikari is that you have material attachments. That practically means what mode of material nature does attachment come from? Rajas, or the mode of passion, exactly. And then, by working, when you're in the mode of passion, by working according to the authority of the scriptures, then gradually you get detachment. And that practically means that you change from passion to goodness, because detachment is the quality of goodness. And then you come to the platform of jnana, which is detachment or renunciation. But what we've heard before, and this is the tricky part, is that this jnana platform, one should still work. This is what's going to be explained in this chapter. And that work while one's on the jnana platform is called buddhi yoga or nishkam karma. That it's karma, but on the jnana platform. Okay, now we're going to be going over this again and again and again until it's gradually clear. The yoga ladder is very important because one has to know where to place himself and where to place others. Sometimes one has to find that, one has that responsibility. So a progression. I'm going to have to move on. We'll save time at the end for questions. But this progression is so essential to understand. It's what Krishna is describing here. The 8th verse. Perform your prescribed duty, for doing so is better than not working. So karma, for you, whose adhikari is karma, is better than renouncing work, because you are not on the jnana platform to renounce work. One cannot even maintain one's physical body without work. And now, to bring that nishkam karma, or jnana and karma combined platform, to Krishna consciousness platform, because one can perform one's prescribed duty in a detached way, but that's not Krishna consciousness, because Krishna consciousness means detached materially and attached to Krishna spiritually. Krishna explains that which, what makes it Krishna conscious in text 9. Work done as a sacrifice for Vishnu, because if you have no material desires, why should you work? Work done as a sacrifice for Vishnu has to be performed, otherwise work causes bondage in this material world. Therefore, O son of Kunti, perform your prescribed duties for his satisfaction, and in this way, that way, you will always remain free from bondage. So this section describes, 3 through 9, describes nishkam karma. Krishna is recommending nishkam karma to Arjuna, which is work with knowledge and detachment. Nishkam karma allows the soul, who is active by nature, to be purified through detached activities. And higher still, when those detached activities are offered to Krishna with devotion, then that's karma yoga, bhakti yoga, like that. Now we'll make some very subtle distinctions in these stages, but for now we'll just get somewhat accustomed to the terms. So this jnana platform, what Krishna is recommending on this jnana platform is not renunciation of work, but it's renunciation of what? The fruit of one's activities, and it's called Buddhi Yoga or Nishkam Karma. At this platform over here. Ooh, okay. Now, Krishna has explained over here renunciation or work, and he's explained Nishkam Karma up to text 9. Now he's going to start again at the bottom of the yoga ladder and gradually move up. And this next section is called From Karma Kanda to Karma Yoga. From Karma Kanda to Karma Yoga. When one comes into this material world, one comes because he has material desires. Or one, practically speaking, he's envious of Krishna. He doesn't want to accept Krishna as the enjoyer and controller, and he has material desires and he wants to enjoy. An animal or a human being enjoys unrestrictedly. A human being who is like an animal enjoys his senses unrestricted, unlimitedly, trying to get as much as he can, as quick as he can, like that. That is just animal life. The Vedic civilization or the Vedic culture supplies a way that one can satisfy his material desires and become purified rather than degraded. Now, I'm going to have to erase this over here. The bottom, the very bottom of sort of human life, which isn't really human life, is below this line, is one is trying to gratify his senses unrestrictedly, not following any rules and regulations. And this is, practically speaking, the mode of ignorance. Now, the Vedic civilization tells one how one can enjoy his material desires, his material attachments, by surrender to the Vedic formulas. And you want your sense enjoyment, but surrender to the authority of the Vedas. And you will get your sense enjoyment. And that is called Karma Kanda. You get your sense enjoyment, but you get it by surrendering to the Vedas. Right? And just by the process of accepting authority on how you're going to enjoy yourself, this elevates one. Because you're accepting authority. You're not doing just what you want. You're accepting the authority that's descending. So there is some subservience to God in that. And therefore it's purifying. So therefore, this Vedic system is glorious. Krishna explains in text 10, in the beginning of creation, the Lord of all creatures, Vishnu, sent forth generations of men and demigods along with sacrifices for Vishnu and blessed them by saying, be thou happy by this jaga sacrifice, because its performance will bestow upon you everything desirable for living happily and achieving liberation. So this is the Vedic system, living happily and ultimately, gradually, achieving liberation. Now, how will one's material desires be fulfilled in this Vedic system? Text 11. The demigods, being pleased by sacrifices, will also please you, and thus, by cooperation between who offer these sacrifices with great prosperity, right? So this is cooperative business only. But it is a legitimate Vedic way to satisfy one's material desires. In charge of the various necessities of life, text 12, the demigods, being satisfied by the performance of jaga sacrifice, will supply all necessities to you. But he who enjoys such gifts without offering them to the demigods in return is certainly a thief, Stena eva soha. That's the last part of the last line. Yo bunte, one who enjoys stena eva soha, without offering back to the demigods, one enjoys in an unrestricted way, not following this performed Vedic system, is a thief. And what happens to thieves? They'll be punished. And what is the punishment? They go down. It's sinful. They go down. And if they follow the system, even though they have material desires, they'll be elevated. Now, how does someone become elevated while following the Vedic system of sacrifice? Or rather, why is it naturally elevating? We gave the first answer already, because one is submitting to authority. And that's a start, just submitting to authority. Because the one in ignorance wants to just unrestrictedly do whatever he wants. So it's a step towards Krishna if one submits to authority. Second reason, you have to perform sacrifices. So when you're performing sacrifices, you're dealing with the Brahmin priests. So first, the type of sacrifices that one performs are centered only in this life. You want a son, you want money, you want health. These are lower class sacrifices, only centered in this life, very short term. But gradually, by associating with the priests and hearing about better sacrifices that can be performed, and therefore more sense gratification that one can get, one understands that why be satisfied with a son or money or health in this life when you can go to Swaga, heaven, and enjoy there. Drink somaras, there's beautiful women, Nandanandan gardens, and there's so much enjoyment, and why live for only 100 years when you can live for thousands of years? So you are not your body. So take you, leave this body behind, perform these higher sacrifices, and go to heaven. Still in the mode of passion. Still sakama. Sakama. Karmakanda. Still karmakanda. Not actually sakama karma yoga. Because there's no yoga involved. Yoga means connection to the Supreme. It's just enjoyment, karmakanda. But still, it's a step up. Everyone follow how this is a step up? Because implicitly, you're understanding that you're not your body in there. And your vision is looking further in the future. Now, this is the Vedic system. If Arjuna is thinking that he doesn't need these juggas that are described here in charge of the various necessities of life. So on this lower stage, you're talking about attaining various necessities of life through jugga. If Arjuna is thinking that I don't need jugga to perform sacrifices like you're describing to get to my various necessities of life, I'll go to the forest. And I'll just live by begging, as he said. Why do I need jugga? So I can still follow my plans. And therefore I won't be sinful by not offering things to the demigods. I won't be a thief. I won't be sinful. And I also won't be sinful by engaging in this ghastly warfare. I'll just go to the forest and live in that way. I don't need jugga. I don't need to fight. And then Krishna's reply to that is the next verse. That Arjuna, even though you go to the forest, you still have to eat. And if you eat, and your food isn't offered for sacrifice, still you'll be eating sin. The devotees of the Lord are released from all kinds of sin because they eat food which is offered first for sacrifice. Others who prepare food for personal sense enjoyment verily eat only sin. All living bodies subsist on food grains. You need these things just to live. So you have to depend on prescribed duties in the demigods, which are produced from rains. Rains are produced by performance of jugga, sacrifice, and jugga is performed of is born of prescribed duties. Regulated activities are prescribed in the Vedas, and the Vedas are directly manifest from the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Consequently, the all-pervading transcendence is eternally situated in acts of sacrifice. Here, a very interesting logic is described. And this logic is the logic that brings one from the platform of karmakanda to karma yoga, sakama karma yoga. The logic is that you are dependent on grains. And where do grains come from? Grains come from, of course, the earth, but they don't come just from the earth. You need rain. The earth isn't sufficient. You need water, which comes from rain. Now, where does rain come from? Rain is a result of performing jaga. By performing jaga, when one performs a sacrifice to Indra, then the rains will come. Now, why does one perform a jaga to Indra? Because in the Vedas, as prescribed duties, one is told that he has to perform sacrifice to Indra, which produce the rains, which produce the grains, which produce the food, which you depend on. Now, these prescribed duties, these regulated activities, or prescribed duties in text 15, they come from the Vedas. And where do the Vedas come from? They are directly coming from the breathing of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So this link between your food, depending on your food, and depending on Vishnu, or the Personality of Godhead, is being brought out here. And consequently, the all-pervading transcendence, the Personality of Godhead, is situated in acts of sacrifice. Because from the Lord comes the prescribed duties, comes the Vedas, from the Vedas comes the prescribed duties, and from the prescribed duties comes the sacrifices, and therefore, and because these are all absolute, because they're coming from the Lord is actually situated in these sacrifices. So when one realizes that although the demigods are being worshipped, and that Indra, for instance, is the demigod in charge of rain, but actually his power to supply the rain is actually coming from the Personality of Godhead, coming from Vishnu, then one gradually understands that Vishnu is the object of worship. Now, my dear Arjuna, text 16, and ending this section of Karma Kanda to Karma Yoga, one who does not follow in human life the cycle of sacrifice thus established by the Vedas certainly leads a life full of sin. Living only for the satisfaction of the senses, such a person lives in vain. His life is useless, and it's practically worse than useless. His human life is in vain, because the human life is meant for elevation, and he's going to go down. Now, I'd like to explain this point about how Karma Kanda changes to Karma Yoga a little bit from a bit of a different angle. Now, when one performs sacrifice and he understands that he to get his sense gratification, why get my sense gratification now when I can go to Swarga Loka and enjoy? The way that the Vedas are set up and the way that the material world is set up, that one gradually understands, especially when he associates with Brahmin priests, and that's their business, to give people this realization, that there is actually no place that one can enjoy in the material world. Because every place, Brahma, as Krishna explains later, Bhuvanaloka, Puna Avatanavajana, every place is a place of birth and death. So gradually, one gets higher and higher realizations by performing his prescribed duties. First, he surrenders to authority. Second, he starts hearing about his sense enjoyment from these Brahmin priests, and he hears about the Vedas from these Brahmin priests, and therefore his faith, it begins to be established in the Vedas and the Brahmins, because they're giving him what he wants. Sense gratification. And as he's getting faith in the Vedas and faith in the Brahmins, he's also hearing from them about other things, such as Swarga Loka, better things. And he's thinking, yes, this is more wonderful. And then, naturally also, the more one tries to enjoy in this material world, the more one sees that one's mother dies, one's father dies, his pet dog dies, there's a drought somehow or another, and all his bank accounts and grains that he saved has been wiped out, and his favorite cow leaves this world, and so many problems exist, and he's thinking of going to Swarga, and that will be, and life in Swarga will be for thousands of years. But then one hears that Indra also has trouble because he's hearing the Vedas, and Indra's afraid of the demigod, the demons, and he's also, if he goes there, he'll also be afraid of the demons, like that. And Indra sometimes has to hide, and sometimes he commits sin and has to live in a lotus flower for thousands and thousands of years of the demigods. So gradually he's getting this transcendental knowledge through this association. He's getting knowledge, and gradually he's experiencing that the material world doesn't bring him the satisfaction, even though he has his desires, and his desires are getting fulfilled, still he's not feeling satisfied in his heart. And gradually, after hearing the 96,000 lakhs of Vedic Karmakanda verses, he also naturally hears of the 4,000 lakhs of the Jnanakanda verses, and he hears that he's not his body, and he's becoming more receptive to it because he's more and more familiar with the system. He trusts the priests, he trusts the Shastra, and he gradually is becoming detached due to all this, and his acceptance of authority is higher, and he's gradually getting transcendental knowledge and detached, and transcendental knowledge and detached. Right? So that's basically how the system works. This is described here in the Bhagavad Gita in codified forms in this section from Karmakanda to Karma Yoga. And when he actually establishes that my goal is getting out of this world, then Karmakanda becomes Karma Yoga. When yoga means linking with the Supreme. But still he has material desires. Just establishing himself wanting to get out of the material world doesn't automatically free him. But he's established on the process, starting with sa, kama, karma yoga, with material desires. And gradually, he's going to go up to the next stage, which has actually already been described, of working, doing one's duty with detachment, because he already has transcendental knowledge. And what's that called? Nishkam karma, or? Which is a combination of karma and jnana. Okay, so we can see here, karma, if one performs his karma properly, according to the Vedas, it naturally leads to jnana. And one should keep on doing his karma, but on the stage of jnana, that's called nishkam karma. Golly gee. Now, the next section, there's two more sections in this chapter. The next is Nishkam Karma, section D, which I call on your sheet, act dutifully with detachment to set the correct example is Nishkam Karma to set the correct example. Because the question may be raised, prescribed duties are meant to get you, the Vedic prescribed duties are meant to get you material rewards. Now, by your mercy, my dear Brahmin priests, and the mercy of the devotees, I have no longer any material desires. I don't want a son or money or a nice health, nor do I want to go to Swargaloka. I have knowledge that I'm not my body, so therefore I don't have any more material desires, so therefore I don't have to do my prescribed duties anymore. No. Krishna now is going to explain even though one doesn't have material desires, should do his prescribed duties on the platform of the self. So that's Nishkam Karma to set the correct example, 17 to 32. And then finally, the great danger will be described. The great danger, although one may be very detached from everything, still, because one has a material body, one has to be very, 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 very wary of two things. And that is the last section, which we've called, and both on your sheet and for memorization, beware of lust and anger. Because that will immediately bring one from the jnana platform right down to the lowest platform possible. That's the last section, beware of lust and anger, 36 through 42. Okay, so we'll complete chapter 3 tomorrow. Any questions? No one's ready.
So, according to this, it appears that third chapter, verses 3 through 9, as well as 17 through 32, are Nishkam karma.
Right, but except that as 17 through 32 explains why, the 3 through 9 explains what is Nishkam karma more, and how one should perform his prescribed duty with detachment. But it also points that Arjuna, until you're on the jnana platform, you especially should do your prescribed duty. But the next section describes a completely another reason for why one should do one prescribed duty, even if one is on the jnana platform, and that is to set the correct example for others. And Krishna says, even I perform my prescribed duty. I don't have anything to gain by my duties, but yet I'm even doing it to set the right example for others. So that's the difference is in the in somewhat in the angle of presentation of Nishkam karma.
It was the karma yoga and then the jnana platform. So the question is, where's the jnana yoga?
There's all kinds of subtleties, but you have to look at it from different points of view. This jnana yoga, where one renounces one's activities, right, and takes sannyas. Is this your question? Is there such a thing as that, or sankhya yoga? That is a legitimate path, but it is not at all what Krishna is recommending.
So jnana yoga
that is a path. Huh?
So jnana yoga is not discussed in this chapter.
Jnana yoga is not discussed at all in the Bhagavad Gita, except to say not to do it. But karma yoga on the jnana platform is discussed, and that's chapter 5. See, this chapter basically discusses karma yoga on the sakama platform, and then some reason why to do it on the nishkama platform. And chapter 5 will discuss karma yoga on the nishkama platform, which is called action in Krishna consciousness, and then beyond that, the liberation.
So jnana yoga is this verse like you like.
The first six chapters, by the way, are very tricky. They're the most complicated chapters in the whole Bhagavad Gita. But once you understand them, it's a real light for practical knowledge and why we act the way we do and how to preach to others. It's real. It's glorious, but it's tricky because there's so many subtleties to it, and you explain it one way, and then you have to turn around and explain it from another point of view, and it looks different. So you have to put all the pieces together. And I'll explain it so many times that by the end, gradually, I hope that everyone will get the hang of it.
Just to make sure I understood. The first verse of the sixth chapter, don't like
father. Sixth chapter?
Yeah. So this is jnana yoga, how not to do jnana yoga, this is what you mean?
How not to do jnana yoga?
Well, this verse,
the one who is actually a sannyasi is one who is detached from the fruit of his work, not who doesn't do his prescribed duties. That's what that verse says, right?
Yeah.
Who lights no fire and performs no work. Not one who doesn't do his prescribed duties. He is not the sannyasi, but the sannyasi is one who is detached from the fruit of his work. Because Krishna is dead against, in here, people giving up their duties. Because, especially in Kali Yuga, it means disaster. And I'll explain it. It comes out in the next section why. When you give up your material, if you lose your gross material desires and give up your work, or if you give up your work before your heart is clean, which is the actual point that Krishna is mentioning. If you give up your work before your heart is clean, you know what you become? A hippie. That's just what happened in the 60s. People gave up all the societal prescribed duties, but their heart wasn't clean, and they engaged in more abominable activities, worse, on the mode of ignorance level. That's why Krishna is preaching against the hippies here. But it's a fact. That's just what happens when one gives up his prescribed duties prematurely, without his heart being clean.
So what happened to the hippie that fell down from his...
There's no falling down from the hippie platform. It's already to the bottom. Because they say, what's wrong with being a dog? So practically they are dogs. They were dogs. Yes, any other comments, more comments that would you like me to play with? Yes? Okay.
Are you going to present us also how we often preach to people, we face people who are more ignorant and have don't
accept? Yeah, well, you just follow. See, this Bhagavad Gita is our basic preaching book. Prabhupada told me this. This is the book that we preach from. So if you understand the Bhagavad Gita thoroughly, you will understand how to preach to someone according to what platform he's in. And basically, when one is in a lower platform, you have to engage him in works. And Krishna will explain it just a little bit later. You engage him in doing prescribed duties, and in this case, since there's no Vedic system, they have to do their regular societal work, but encourage them to act in devotion, do that work with devotion and give some of their fruits. Now this is also explained clearly in the 12th chapter of Bhagavad Gita. The 12th chapter gives these stages of Krishna consciousness. One has to understand these stages. All completely practical. Bhagavad Gita is a practical book.
When I did Srila Prabhupada say that a lot of his devotees wanted to go to the heaven planets, and so he was criticizing that.
Yes, we should not want to go there. You know why? Because the demons sometimes come. You won't be happy there. And not only that, even if you live for 100,000 years, one day you're going to die and you won't like it. And in the 13th chapter, the 13th chapter, Arjuna asks many questions, and one of them is, what is karma? So there is a general way of understanding karma, but if one reads carefully Prabhupada's purport and understands some of the secrets, karma doesn't only mean the activities that give one a material body, but karma technically means when one goes to heaven through performing sacrifices, and there's a little bit of piety remaining, that little bit of piety causes him to fall down to the earth planet and give him that first material body, human body, after falling down from the heavenly planets, and that is what Krishna describes karma as being. So even if you go up to the heavenly planets, you have to come down again. So don't take that situation at all, rather find an eternal situation. But Krishna also says, yayetam mam prapadyante, that if you do want to go to the heavenly planets, or you do want to be a big, big, big this, or a rich that, or be a very powerful that, or anything you want, or have many of these, and enjoy so many of those, he will give you that. Krishna is a very tricky fellow. He will give you whatever you want. So therefore, the devotee here must hear again and again and again and again and again and again that he shouldn't want anything else except the lotus feet of Sri Sri Radha and Krishna. We have to hear it again and again because these weeds, subtle weeds of material desires, tend to come out again and again in our heart. We clean our heart one time and we think, no, I've surrendered already. But no, it's ongoing. So we have to clean.
In the Shastras it says clearly that also the Vedas and everything is taught from the higher systems everywhere. So if one goes there by, let's say, the mode of goodness, is it not possible that he can also make great advancement?
Yes, but it's so difficult to make advancement on the higher planetary systems because always there are bands playing and there are elephants. And there's so many, and there's excitement going on, and the gardens are there, and you're going to live for thousands of years, and there's always field excursions here and there, and wonderful sacrifice, and we hear how they, and when there was a big sacrifice was being performed, and Sati, Lord Shiva's wife, wanted to go because all her relatives were going to be there and dress in her best saris. So you can make advancement from there, but the tendency, it's just like that's not a good example. Not a fair example. But I'll say it anyway. Sometimes, like, there's devotees in India, which is less wealthy than the United States, so they're devotees. And then they go to the United States, into a temple of the United States, right? But they're surrounded by such material opulence that they forget all about devotion. And then they just merge into the great consumer economy. because they get distracted. Because Bhogaishwarya Pashaktanam Taya Parijitetasam Vyavya Sadmika Buddhya Samadhao Navidiyate. If we have the desire for these two things, Bhoga and Aishwarya, enjoyment and opulence, the resolute determination for devotional service, now that takes place in our heart. So we have to weed these things out. So no one should go to the heavenly planets.
Even to make spiritual advancement.
Right. Don't say, I'm going, but only to make spiritual advancement. better to take shelter of Sri Vrindavan Dham to make the greatest advancement. Because see what happens when the demons attack in Vrindavan? See, there's no problem. Krishna just takes him, swings him around, and throws him in the trees. And if he's too busy, Balaram does it. Go to Vrindavan. Yeah.